flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from Radio Row in New Orleans, Grant and Danny on the fan. Danny is back in D.C. I'm out here at the Convention Center in Louisiana ahead of Super Bowl 59, tracking down some of our favorite guests, and in this case, most handsome guests that we talk football with all year long. Trevor Sikkema of PFF stopping through to discuss a Commanders team. Looked like for a minute we'd be talking a lot about this week, but the clock struck midnight, Trevor, on old Cinderella.
Oh, it did. And honestly, it was tough to watch that game just because of the mistakes, right? The fumbles, the turnovers, and it was a big reason why they aren't victorious in that game, right? It was the rubber match of, all right, they took one against the Eagles, they lost one of the Eagles, and they were right there. And it's a team that they knew very well, and I felt like they were playing well enough to where, okay, maybe they could have been there at the very end. I don't know what would happen at the very end, but if you take away those turnovers, if you play a little bit cleaner of a brand of football, it would have been really exciting down to the end. So I think it's a shame that it felt like the Eagles didn't get the best of the Commanders, and that's always tough when that's the case. And so it shouldn't damper an incredible year that they have had. It just goes to show you, a little new ownership, new head coach, new direction, new vibes, new quarterback. Obviously, if you hit all of those things, and if you hit even some of those things, how quickly it could turn around when you get the right guys in the right spots.
I don't even know if this exercise is worth doing, but I am interested in the idea of how to divvy up the success pie, so
yes,
to speak.
Right.
Right. The Harris ownership group,
yep,
at the very top.
Yep.
And then Adam Peters, who had a bang up first off season.
Yep.
Dan Quinn's hired as a second time head coach and changed the culture, beloved in the locker room. And then obviously Daniels has this historical year as a rookie quarterback we've never seen. I mean, where would you kind of start ranking import, if that's a thing?
Yeah. So the way that I kind of go about it now is like, ownership and general manager set the culture. The coach sets the floor. The quarterback sets the ceiling. That's kind of the way that I look at it. I don't know what that comes out to percentage-wise, but the way that I think about these situations is you have these conversations. These are the fun conversations that you have with your friends out at a bar on the couch of like, oh, you know, what's more important? And I think about how there is definitely a trickle-down effect when it comes to ownership and when it comes to the general manager. And you think about this in any organization, right? Think about any place that you work where you have some sort of hierarchy or structure of your boss and their boss and everything. A lot of times you take on the identity, the attitude, the work ethic of the people that are above you. And that trickles down throughout the entire organization. So it's important to have the right people at the ownership spot, and especially the general manager spot, depending on how hands-on the owner is, to truly set the culture of what the organization is. You then go to the coach. The coach, to me, of course they can raise the ceiling, there's no doubt about it, but a great coach raises the floor. A great coach gets the most out of players that you would say, ah, yeah, maybe they're fringe roster guys, but for us, they're impact players. They're important role players. They're important positional players. And then, of course, the quarterback, it raises the ceiling, because even if you have a great coach, if you don't have a great quarterback, there's only so far that they can go. It's the quarterback that really brings you to the ceiling of where you want to be. So I don't know where that comes out percent-wise, and I honestly think that might be a bad way to go about the exercise. The way that I always just think about it is, guys at the very top, they set the culture. The coach sets the floor. The quarterback sets the ceiling.
Trevor Sikkema of PFF with us here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan in D.C., live from Media Row in New Orleans. What did you make of Daniel's rookie season, and when did you kind of start buying into how uniquely special he might be?
Yeah, so I'll be honest. You know, as a draft analyst, he was my QB3. You know, I had him ranked in the 20s on my big board. Very clearly had Caleb Williams and Drake May ahead of him. And I appreciated everything that Daniels did in his Heisman Trophy winning year at LSU. But I went, all right, you know, you got Malik Nabers, you got Brian Thomas Jr., you're throwing the slot fade, and you're throwing the deep ball a lot. Obviously, it was a fantastic, potent offense. But I go, okay, how translatable is that to the NFL? Of course, he goes into a good situation where Cliff Kingsbury knows what he does very well. And I think both of how they approach offenses line up very well. And you saw that this year. But I'll tell you, there was a moment, and I won't say that this was like the moment, but it was the first moment. Preseason game, they're playing Miami. Daniels didn't, I mean, he played like what, one series, two series, whatever. He didn't play a lot. There's a comeback route that he throws that was on a rope straight to his wide receiver's hands. Brilliant timing, full confidence on the throw. And I go, that's a rookie? Because when you think about comeback throws at the NFL level, they're dangerous. If you hint at those throws at all whatsoever, if you are late, if you are off target, that cornerback's going to undercut that. And guess what? It's a pick six the other way around. And nobody wants to throw pick sixes in your rookie season. And so I watched him throw that throw with so much confidence perfectly. And I go, this dude's having fun. This dude's already playing free. He's already playing loose. Because you look at the other guys around the league. Think of Caleb Williams. Think of Drake May. We saw great moments for them, but they're playing a little tight this year. They're rookies. They don't want to mess up. They're seeing things new for the first time. It's often that lack of confidence that really shows up the most for rookies. And for Jaden Daniels to show that in his first, one of his first preseason games of action, to me, I go, okay, we might have something here. Then obviously the Bucs game, you know, you lose that game, but he looks pretty good there. And then you get the Bengals game a couple of weeks later, or whatever, the next week, a couple of weeks later, whatever it was, and you go, okay, this kid's special, right? I mean, like, then you go, okay, that was the confidence that I saw in the preseason, but for an entire game, when it mattered most, lights are brightest, going up against Joe Burrow, all that good stuff. So it really was a culmination of a couple of preseason moments that gave me a hint, and then that Bengals game that you go, all right, this kid's for real.
In terms of surrounding him, he's on his rookie deal, making no money. So there's an aggressiveness, maybe, that you can have for a few years. Offensively, what should they be looking to do, do you think, this offseason?
Well, I think that they were able to get a good amount out of some role players that were there. It was great to see the year that Terry McLaurin had. Obviously, Diami Brown had a couple of big moments for them. You know, you're hoping that Ben Sennett obviously becomes a big-time tight end for them and just a sort of a versatile piece along that offense. You know, Zach Ertz, great production this year, was able to play a crucial role in some key moments. He's not getting any younger. I'm not breaking any news by saying that. You know, I think the run game was good. It could get a little bit stronger, but I think that was a really important part of their offense this year. The offensive line, I think through the first 8-9 weeks of the season, you know, our grades had them as like a top five offensive line in the NFL. And then second half of the season, I was more close to probably like middle of the pack, a little bit top 20, but a little bit closer to 20. Obviously, the Sam Cosmi injury is tough because that's an injury that's going to linger into next year. So you got to think about that. You were already kind of thinking, all right, what's the long-term plan with Brandon Coleman? You know, are you going to play him at tackle? Are you going to move somebody inside? Are you looking to draft another offensive tackle there? But when I look at this team, I think another stud wide receiver would be great to really be able to pair with Terry McLaurin. And then, do you need to invest a major asset, whether it's free agency capital or a higher draft pick on the offensive line, if that's something that you need to do there? So in order to sustain that success for them, I think that's important. You know, there were a team that was reported to be in on Brandon Ayuk, so we know that they're thinking about it as well. They're looking to go that direction. I'm sure that they'll, you know, test the waters on T. Higgins and, you know, see if he's viable for them to bring in. But there's a lot of really good wide receivers that they could potentially get even at the back end of the first round. But, you know, that's not even to talk about the other side of the ball. I think they need a premier pass rusher still. They're in a great spot at the back end of the first round to be able to get one of those guys. You probably want another outside corner to be able to start. And have true versatility with Mikey Sanders still, be able to play him as a slot, as an outside, maybe some moonlight plays at safety as well, just because of how great of a football player he is. And so that's sort of what comes to my mind with Washington. It's like, all right, these are the next steps for him.
Trevor Sikkema of PFF on Grant and Danny. What's your philosophy? And I'm asking you to speak for now, like the whole analytics community.
Yeah.
But no, more so you, honestly.
Yeah.
I've kind of come around on drafting running backs early.
Mm-hmm.
And here's kind of my thought on this. I was a never do that guy.
Yeah.
I now am more the never pay the guy the second contract guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, you look at how some of these weapons, like I'm just viewing it more like I don't really care what position you play. If you have speed and you score touchdowns, like that's what I care about. Would you have an issue with them drafting a home run hitter earlier and that late first round, second round, whatever, at running back?
No, I would not. You know, I think that there are – I would lean corner, pass rusher, wide receiver a little bit more than running back, just because running backs are always so plentiful, because I think that's where the value part comes from. It's not like we think that running backs aren't valuable to the game of football. It's a supply and demand thing. It's a capitalism thing. It's how often you can get a running back that can do so many things for you. Every year, you have the opportunity to either draft one or sign one, probably. So, you know, the guys that are at the very top, they're special. You know, we understand that, but a lot of guys can be serviceable for you and do what you need to do from the running back position. So it's more of the fact that there's just so much more of a supply than there is a demand for exactly what you would need out of a bell cow back. But that's not to say that, especially if you get into the back end of the first round, because this is the other part of the formula. If you're drafting Saquon Barkley at 2 overall, his contract, his rookie contract is way different than if you were drafting a running back at the back end of the first, right? So you can't just sit here and say, well, you never draft a running back in the first round. Well, these are two totally different conversations. If you're drafting Saquon or Zeke Elliott or Leonard Fournette in the top five, you are then immediately paying them because of the guaranteed money that's on the rookie deal. You are paying them as if they are a top five back in the NFL already, like right there.
Right.
So when you bring up the second contract conversation, you're basically already in the second contract. So if you are waiting till the back end of the first round, well, now you got a steal. And now you can get a guy like, I don't know, Marian Hampton from UNC. You know, like, I don't think Josh Genty is lasting that long. But, you know, like somebody like that, or a Cam Scadabo in the second round or something like that. Like, that is the point of the conversation that I think needs more nuance. Is it has to do with the supply versus the demand, and then what the free agent market is telling us about how you should value them compared to a cost-controlled rookie contract. That the only thing that matters is where you are picked. So I think that's the formula when you really talk about guys in the first round.
If you're Adam Peters.
Yeah.
So Trevor Sikkema, congrats. Promotion. GM. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Washington Commanders. You did it.
Not as handsome.
It's close. You guys are both very handsome, but I'll give the nod to Adam Peters for now. What is your interest level in Myles Garrett? And what would you be willing to trade for him? I'm just throwing this out here because I saw like 33rd team had two firsts.
Yes. So that's what I think it is. I think that when you were talking about Cleveland, the only way they trade Myles Garrett, because there's kind of a lot that goes into this. Myles Garrett, from a team acquiring him perspective, is actually on a pretty team-friendly deal.
He's got huge 2 years of...
He's got 2 years, very low cap.
I think it's like 19 and 20.
It's 19 and 20, yeah. And all the guaranteed money is off of the deal. So the team trading for him is it loves it, like does not really care.
But imagine has to extend him.
The answer is probably,
yeah.
But Miles wants to go to a contender so bad, he might not hardball that too much,
okay.
Because he knows how good he is anyway. So maybe it does come with an extension, maybe not. But the team that's trading for him, you know, sometimes you get these guys who have signed these massive deals or whatever, and you're almost, the trade price goes into, well, I've got to pay him a lot of money. So I'm obviously not going to give you as much in return because I'm going to have to pay him a lot of money. The opposite is true in this regard, because the Cleveland Browns would have to pay basically all the money. They're accelerating almost $36 million. I think it's right around $36 million on the cap if they trade him. And the problem is, they could designate him as a post-June 1 trade, which that means you can spread the money out over 2 years. But he has like a roster bonus or a contract bonus that happens in March that basically neutralizes all that. So in order for the Browns to even trade him, you've got to jump through some hoops. You got to fully extend. I think Jason from Over the Cap was tweeting this out. He was basically like, you essentially have to restructure Deshaun Watson – you have to restructure Denzel Ward, and you probably have to cut Jack Conklin, even to make it feasible to trade him. Wow. So there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through here, which get us to the price. What makes that worth it for Cleveland? And that price is, without question, in my opinion, two first-round picks at a minimum.
And would you, if you're Washington, is that too steep?
Yes. No, no question. No question I'd make this deal. Because you, one of your first-round picks is already at the very end of the first round.
Yeah.
The one that next year you're hoping is starts with a three, right? You're hoping the number starts with a three. So you don't care. You're signing a pass rusher who's still in his prime, is one of the best players in the world, defensive player of the year caliber type of a player, and addresses one of your biggest needs at a premium position at a cost-controlled environment. I'm not thinking twice if I'm Washington and they have the opportunity to do this, especially if they don't have to give a player in return. You know, if Cleveland tries to play hardball about it and they're like, well, you know, we want Johnny Newton in return, or like we want a young guy in return, something like that, then I think that's really where the negotiations start. But for Cleveland, a trade for Myles Garrett only makes sense if they are tearing all of it down and they are looking to gain ammunition for 2026 to move up to get some sort of quarterback that they want, because they're probably not going to be good next year anyway. So I think that it has to be a two first-round pick conversation, because they're going to want the one this year to rebuild as much as they can, and then they're going to have to want the one next year to have ammunition to potentially move up to get the quarterback that they want, because it just looks like Deshaun Watson's time there is running out.
Trevor, you know, I've loved your work for years. Keep doing good things.
Appreciate it, brother. Anytime.
No question I make this deal, Sikkema said. One of your first-round picks is already getting to the first round. Says the next one might be in the 30s. You get a pass rusher in his prime, one of the best players in the world, address one of your biggest needs at a premium position. I'm not thinking twice if I'm Washington. He is ready to trade two ones for Myles Garrett.
All in.
We'll get Danny's reaction to that next right here on The Fan.